Can I say a quick thing about Jigra? Which
Yeah.
was, when I went back and edited it, I was really disappointed that I didn't remember at the time when you brought up Alcatraz. Remember on the tour when they were like, Alcatraz, it's so much more than just a prison.
Oh my god, yeah. And you and I were both just like,
what does that mean?
Like, people died here.
And, like, if they're thinking about the, you know, like, the indigenous protesting of, like, trying to, like, take back the land. Like, there's, there is more to the story. But, like, just the way they phrased
it, was
like,
the
it's not
tone.
An amusement park.
It really felt like an amusement park, yeah. And
it felt like you'd say it at Disney World.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that. That was hilarious.
Yeah. Welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood boys.
We really are this time.
I know. This is like literally the first time that that tagline is like 120% accurate.
It truly is. We are here talking about the Bollywood boys, the Roshans.
Yes, we are. The four-part miniseries on Netflix.
Yes.
That was definitely made by the Roshans.
You can tell that they had a hand in it. I think that's a reasonable observation. What were some of your kind of overarching thoughts and reactions to the documentary?
I enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was pleasant.
Pleasant, yes.
Yeah, I thought it was a pleasant watch. I did genuinely really enjoy learning more about, like, the original Roshan.
Sure,
Rithik's grandfather. I think I might be a little in love with Rajesh. I just liked his energy. He had a certain sparkle.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, but ultimately, I think I expected more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was enjoyable, but I don't necessarily feel like I really learned a lot about them as individuals. Like, it felt more like we were kind of looking at a resume of what they've accomplished, which and there's nothing wrong with that, but when you hear about a documentary, you kind of feel like you might get a little bit more personal insight.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair observation, because I liked it too. I did like the second two episodes
more
than the first two. I think part of that is because in the first episode, obviously, we didn't have Roshan there to tell his own story.
Right.
But we also, you know, we didn't hear as much kind of personal stuff about him, about his life, about his struggles, as we did in The Romantics. I did find myself comparing this to The Romantics a lot.
I did too, and I don't think it was as good.
I agree, and I think it would have worked better chronologically if they had gone through, and really that would have meant, like, not separating out the Rajesh and Rakesh stuff so much.
Yeah.
I would have really liked to understand a little bit more about how those two, like, worked together and how they influenced each other, because I'm sure there's something to that.
Right.
But they just kind of, like, sprinkled it in throughout.
Yeah, was Rajesh finding work as Rakesh was struggling, or were they both kind of finding their way simultaneously?
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like they were willing to open up a very, very tiny window into their personal lives. And I understand that. I understand wanting to be private. But, like, it was so tiny as to almost be, like, what's the point?
Inconsequential. Yeah, yeah, and there are definitely a few points that I want to talk more in depth about with this. But, like, there were some points where they, like, sort of dropped in a little bit of personal stuff, but then didn't really expand on it in any meaningful way. And I was like, why even have it then? And I also felt like they were trying to have a narrative arc.
Yeah.
That, they, like, every episode sort of ended with a cliffhanger that was supposed to kind of, like, lead you into the next episode, but then that's not really what the next episode was about.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just, it wasn't great, but there was some interesting stuff, and I appreciated having Rithik there kind of as our narrator. I felt like he shared a lot of great insights about his family, about his work, and how it all kind of relates together. He's clearly a very, like, observant guy.
Yeah. No, I did enjoy getting to know that side of him. I have some thoughts about the individual, like, his individual episode that I'll share when we get to okay. that point. But, yeah, like, I'm glad they made it. I wish it had been a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Do we talk about how many talking heads there are?
How many talking heads there
are? Like, there's so many people that were interviewed.
There were a lot of people that were interviewed, and I couldn't always keep track of who everybody was. Like, at least just what their relationship was to the industry and to the family.
Exactly, yeah.
And that could just be our lack of knowledge, especially around, like, some of the earlier work that was being talked about.
I did read some reviews just like after I finished, just to be like, huh, what do I want to research? And multiple people mentioned that they felt like too many people were brought in to interview and talk. And so then it meant that people kind of had like random sentences.
Yeah.
So you never really got the full focus of what each individual was trying to say about a specific thing.
Yeah.
That was something that people leaving reviews were like, okay, it would have been better to have more content from fewer people.
Yeah.
And then it would have been easier to keep things organized. Yeah.
I think that's a totally reasonable observation.
Also, just a sidebar, did you notice the guy that kind of looked like Jeff Goldblum?
No.
Okay. All right.
Did you think, was that...
The gray-haired guy with the glasses. I can't
Bonsali,
remember.
Bonsali, I think, was in his name. Maybe. I don't remember if that was his first name or his last name. I think I know which guy you're talking about.
Okay, he had just a little bit of, like, Jeff Goldblum energy.
Sure. I was just going to also say that the documentary was directed by Shashi Ranjan.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get into it. So our first episode is largely about Roshan, about the grandfather and father, the patriarch of the family. But before we dive into his story, we start with some opening, just kind of like random comments from people about the Roshan family. Was there anything, any gems from that you wanted to call attention to?
I don't think so. Not at this moment, no.
The only one that I wanted to make sure we talked about was Jackie Shroff.
Oh, saying, yeah, yeah. I actually thought he was
going on the face journey I went on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he said that Hrithik is the handsomest man in Bollywood besides him.
Yeah, and I was like,
he does have a son in Bollywood. And I'm like, okay, one, rude Jackie Shroff. Two, maybe in his mind, because Tiger looks exactly like him, he's like, this just is me saying that.
I think that's a very generous read.
If I were Tiger, that's how I would choose to interpret that comment.
Yeah. I really thought he was gonna go in a different direction with that sentence. I thought he was gonna be like, oh, Hrithik's the most beautiful man in Bollywood other than my son who looks like me. Like, you could have...
Yeah, that, you're right, yeah.
You could have,
He forgot about Tiger for just a second.
Although, you know what? Maybe, you know, he and Tiger were talking about Hrithik beforehand, and Tiger was like, Hrithik is more beautiful.
And so, like, and so are you, Dad.
Yeah.
So Jackie felt justified in saying it. Yeah, he was bringing an energy.
Yes, an energy that Hrithik is more handsome than his son.
But yeah, the narrative of the documentary starts with, and actually the documentary itself, the actual first thing that happens is Hrithik sitting down and listening to an old tape recording of his grandfather, Roshan Lal Nagrat, singing one of his compositions. And Hrithik tells us that this is the first time that he's ever heard his grandfather's voice, which is really beautiful.
It's sad that his grandfather died so young.
Yeah, he was only 50 when he died.
Mm-hmm.
But so we get some of Roshan's story. He first worked in radio and then he transitioned into writing film scores. The first film that he scored was a flop, but he was offered the chance to work in a second film. Mm-hmm. And the director was so confident in him that he rejected an investor who only agreed to invest if Roshan were fired from the project.
Mm-hmm. knowing nothing about these people personally, I mm-hmm. feel like Rithik is maybe his spirit aligns with his grandfather. Like, uh-huh. you know, just based on what we've heard about Rithik, I feel like that would be Rithik's response as mm-hmm. well. Like, if he were in a room where someone was like, here, we'll give you this financial backing as long as you dump Rithik, I feel like Rithik would be like, okay, bye.
You should probably dump me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I feel like there's a gentleness and a sensitivity mm-hmm. in Rithik and in Rajesh that came yeah. from Roshan. And not, you know, Rakesh is certainly bringing his own stuff to the table. But right. I feel like those two both have, everyone is talking about them both having that same soulfulness.
Yeah.
But this director's gamble pays off. Roshan goes on to compose some of the most beloved songs and soundtracks of the era. We hear a lot of different observations about the way that he creates music and his process and the type of music mm-hmm. that he's making. I did feel, and maybe this is just me as a white American woman, there were several kind of references to different musical theory kinds of things that I didn't really understand. And I didn't know, again, if that was just a cultural thing or if other people, like lay people watching this movie, like would not have necessarily known what all of those terms were. So that was one of my yeah. other kind of complaints about at least this first episode, is like they kept referencing these things that I was like, I don't know what that means. And it might be me, but it might not, it might have served from more context too if other people were confused by that.
Yeah.
But I did think it's interesting, this kind of trait of his creative process is reflected in his son's and grandson's work, that he wrote his music to fit the lyrics of yeah. the songs as opposed to the other way around.
Right.
And it's that kind of centering of the storytelling that I feel like we'll start to see is a through line throughout mm-hmm. this legacy.
Yeah.
So yeah, and this is also where we start to understand more what people's perception of Roshan was. We hear a lot from different playback singers who worked with him and say how thoughtful he was. And Rithik says that he always had a vision of his grandfather being a soulful man. And he says mm-hmm. that his music makes him want to dance, which feels significant, Rithik being, you know, that being his sort of way of expressing himself musically.
Yeah.
And yeah, I didn't fully grasp everything that was going on with some of the ways that he writes his compositions, but mm-hmm. he clearly was doing a lot of variation from the norm that was complex and rewarding.
There was, because as you said earlier, it's, you know, hard to watch this and not also kind of think about the romantics. Mm-hmm. But I did also like that, like, Roshan's wife was a singer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that she also kind of played a part in his process. Like, it just kind of reminded me of Yash and his wife. Mm-hmm. Patty? Was her name Patty?
Pam.
Sorry, yeah. And how, like, Pam and Yash would work together as well. Like, and I just like seeing that in these older couples mm-hmm. that met in a more traditional way. You know?
Yeah, that there's still that mutual respect.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I would have loved to know just a little bit more about their relationship, because they also talk about Roshan's wife, like the matriarch of the family, but barely.
I think the romantics obviously benefited from Pam Chopra still being alive at the time that they were shooting it. So,
yeah,
you know, having her be able to share that inside perspective
mm-hmm.
was certainly a benefit for them. But I totally agreed. I would have loved to have heard more about that mutual respect and about the way that he wrote work with her in mind at times.
Mm-hmm.
People begin to lament in the documentary that Roshan didn't earn the recognition or receive the support that he deserved in his career. And then he died in 1967. He was only 50 years old. Rajesh and Rakesh reflect on how sudden it was. And Rakesh says he grew up quickly after that. He was only 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, he also died in the middle of a project, and his wife actually ended up finishing the last composition for this project on his behalf, which is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But his work lives on, as does the legacy in the work of his sons and grandson. I did write down, because I pulled him up on IMDb, and IMDb has the 2004 Kate Hudson movie Raising Helen as one of Roshan's known for films.
What?
Which I'm pretty sure is inaccurate. I don't think he was posthumously contributing to that particular film.
Unless they had it, like, one of his songs playing in a background scene?
Maybe. It's literally, it's like written.
Oh, that's not correct. I've never seen that movie, so you know.
I haven't either. And it'd be hard for me to imagine them having like a Bollywood number from the 50s or 60s in it. But yeah. that's a perfectly good theory. So anyway, this brings us to episode 2, which is all about Rajesh Roshan, the younger of the two Roshan brothers. Again, I wrote down that he seems really similar to his father in talent and demeanor.
Yeah.
Rajesh says that his mother knew that one of the boys would follow in their father's footsteps, and he began making music from a young age. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting that the first song he wrote for a movie was a lullaby that was written to be sung by a father to his son.
Yeah.
And just that must have been very meaningful for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see how both he and Rakesh, like, put certain experiences or certain emotions of their own, like, into their work.
Yeah.
Both inspired by their father and also just, like, inspired by their own lives.
Their lives and the things that they were going through. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, Rajesh's career kind of takes off from here. It's talked about how he used some unconventional methods in his compositions as well, like his father did. He's bringing in some elements from Western music. He's using English words. So again, just like his father, innovating constantly. And I think that this is really interesting, too, because it's not like he was 12, I think, when his father died.
Yeah.
It's not like he was really training under his father. And so the fact that they kind of had these similar instincts about writing music is really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
There is also mention of him prioritizing lyrics. He even wrote lyrics of his own. So again, there's that centering of the storytelling of the actual words that are being conveyed and having the music suit those words.
I just loved that Hrithik, like, explained how his uncle looks, like, when he's about to, and then he, like, acted it out. Like, it was just, it was very sweet. Obviously, we know they're a family. And we know from, like, Hrithik's Instagram that they're a pretty close-knit family, but it's just cute to see that in action, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And Hrithik even says that he emulates his uncle, maybe even unintentionally, when he's singing. And so he kind of, like, does this little thing, does this little performance for the camera that he's like, this is what I do and this is what my uncle does. And, it is really cute. It's very endearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get just a little bit about Rajesh and his wife, Kanchan.
Yeah.
This was really interesting to me.
Yes.
And I wanted to hear so much more from her.
Yep. Me too.
In a lot of ways to just make sure that she's okay.
Yeah.
Like, just in, like, a mental health capacity. Like, he suggests that it's like love at first sight. He's like immediately like, yep, he doesn't want to get married. His brother arranges his marriage and he's like, yep, okay, yeah, she looks great. And she's like, no, it definitely wasn't love at first sight. And then she talks about how hard it was for her
to move from
her life completely changed. She says her mother-in-law was really hard on her.
Right.
She wasn't very good at speaking English, and so she's, like, also trying to get better at that. And later on, not at this exact point, but Rajesh talks about taking out his anger on her.
Yeah.
And she then kind of, like, gets choked up, and she says, like, you know, our marriage was really hard, and it took a lot of adjusting, and she needed to, like, understand him as a creative person.
Yeah. Well, and they also mentioned that he, like, had, you know, periods of time where he was drinking a lot and where he was coming home at, like, 4 a.m. to the point where Rakesh was like, what are you doing? You can't.
You gotta shape this. Up.
Yeah. And those are the elements where it's like, if you're opening yourselves up enough to share this in the documentary, I do feel like you have to explore it fully then.
Yeah.
And for it just to be kind of wrapped up in two lines with her being like, it took some time to understand him, but hey, he's a creative soul. And now moving on to, like, more of his good work. Those are the parts where I'm like,
Especially because it came right after a series of people talking about, like, how, like, lovely and quiet and peaceful he was. Again, like, all these things that people had also sort of said about his father. Like, he has this similar energy. And then he confesses very openly, like, actually, I've had some anger issues and that's caused complications in my marriage. And
yeah,
I don't have any expectation that anybody say more than what they said.
No.
It's just interesting to me to have left it in at all if that's all they felt comfortable saying about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I also feel like we just didn't really hear from his kids a lot about
him in particular. No. There was one quote from his daughter about, you know, her, like, his talent and everything. She said something about, right, like, him having music in every cell in his body or something. But we barely heard from
right,
them.
Yeah. And that's, like, interesting because, like, we heard more from them about Rithik.
Yeah.
Their cousin, which is, like, fine, but they're there. And
yeah,
it's like, yes, the focus is on these three men, but our families also contribute to who we are. And so mm-hmm. I feel like spending a little more time on the wives and the children of these men. Yeah. I mean, Rithik is a little bit of an outlier because I'm like, it's his ex-wife and his boys are teens. So,
right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, that I'm like, eh, okay, we don't need to necessarily involve them. But yeah, it just feels like an oversight.
I agree with that. And there's a couple of lines, many of them from Javed Akhtar, who just, he says so many things and I'm like, wow, God, you're really smart.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But like, he says something about how an artist's work doesn't exist in essentially a vacuum. That's not what the term he uses, but that's essentially what he's saying. And again, you know, we keep comparing it to the Romantics, but the Romantics, it's a lot of people talking about specifically how the work that Yash Raj Films did, like, contributed to them and their growth and their understanding of themselves as artists. And we did actually get a little bit of that from Shahrukh, which is interesting, and that was, like, a highlight for me. We don't hear that as much in any meaningful way from anyone else, because, like you said, and, like, it sounds like other reviewers said, it's also brief.
Right.
That we don't really fully get the picture of that from any other people. So
yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Like, hearing more from the families would have been amazing, and also just hearing more from other people about the impact that the Roshan's work had on them. So yeah, more praise is heaped on Rajesh for his ability to adapt with the times. Taking risk also ends up being a big theme, kind of starting with his story and then continuing onwards into the rest of the documentary. But he says of himself that he was always too focused on the work to go out and network, which meant that he missed out on working with some big names in the industry, including Yash Chopra.
Mm. Yeah, I did enjoy that self-reflection from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when it first came up, I was a little bit like, okay. And then I liked that it came back around and he was like, this was my struggle. It was a lesson like I think I learned too late because those producers in the early days trained me to expect that. But like, that's not how it goes. I also think, like you said, I wish that things had been structured more chronologically, because it would have been interesting to see, like, what was Rakesh's journey at that same point in time when people stopped knocking on Rajesh's door? Was that a period of time when Rakesh was still calling actor, like, directors and producers every day?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We don't know.
This is exactly what I was wondering, too, because this episode ends with this sort of tease of, like, yeah, you know, suddenly he's scoring all these flops and, like, the score's good, but the movie's bad and things are starting to get harder. And I was like, okay, that never came back. That never resolved in any way. The way that they end it makes it sound like, and he's still doing very poorly, which clearly isn't true. But, like, it was just weird the way they kind of presented that and then never really fully developed what led to him being successful again. And I think we can intuit that, like, working together, the Roshan brothers, they breathed life into each other's careers. But that's not really, like, fully said. It's just implied.
And honestly, it probably would have been nice to have them both interviewed together. Just for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree.
They kind of talk about their relationship to each other, but not really. They kind of just tell stories about each other. And I'm like, well, what's the vibe here?
Well, and other people make observations about how they work so well together.
Mm-hmm.
More so about Rakesh and Rithik working together, but some about Rakesh and Rajesh. And I also thought it was interesting, like, in the Rakesh episode, which we'll get to in a second, Siddharth Anand made an observation about how the type of music that he's seeking out to support his storytelling, he says it should be a case study. Like, clearly he's saying that he's doing good work with that. And I'm like, that would have been a great way to bring together what Rakesh sees in his brother's work. Yeah. And what Rajesh sees in his, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never made a documentary. No. I'm sure it's very difficult.
I'm sure.
You have so much content to go through to figure out then the narrative threads and everything mm-hmm. like that. And it feels like there's some missed opportunities.
Totally.
It's like, should this have been an 8-part series? Should this have had fewer people involved? Like, something should have been slightly different.
Yeah. Whatever parameters they were working within, they should have been different.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's move on to episode 3.
Yeah.
Which starts off with everyone talking about how handsome Rakesh is.
It was really fun because I wouldn't necessarily, it's not like every single shot of him that I'm like, oh my God, that's Hrithik. Uh-huh. But there are some photos, some yeah. moments in action where I'm just like, oh my God, you really look like Hrithik right there. Or yeah. I can see how this man came from you.
Yes, I love that. And I actually feel like Rakesh looks more like Hrithik now that he's older.
Yes.
But looking at pictures of him as a younger man, it was just like certain angles or certain right. like expressions where I was like, oh my gosh, you two look exactly alike. I totally had him in the camp of like, this is like a father and son who are identical. And then seeing all these older pictures of Rakesh, I was like, actually, no, they right. don't always look all that similar. But a lot of the time they do.
And they do have the same eyes.
They do have the same eyes, same beautiful mm-hmm. eyes. There's also a cute moment right at the start of this before we get into like Rakesh's story where Anupam Kher, this is the first mm-hmm. time we see Anupam Kher, yeah. I think, and he's talking about the movie Karan Arjun and uh-huh. he says Karan Johar.
Yes.
And then he like chuckles to himself and he's like, save that one for the bloopers or something.
Yeah.
Which is adorable. But yeah, so Rakesh, he says of himself that he was always interested in acting, but his parents wanted him to focus on his education. They sent him to boarding school, but he caused mayhem there by sneaking out with his friends to go to the movies.
Yeah.
I also really like the story he told about his father at first being proud of him for finding out that he was ranked 10th in his class, and then he found yeah. out that there were only 10 kids in the class. So not so yeah. much.
I thought that was very funny.
But so then after Roshan died, he started working as an AD. Mm-hmm. And now this is really interesting to me because when you think about like nepo babies.
Yeah.
Like clearly there's a lot of nepotism here, but this is different because this is a man who has no other choices, who needs to right. support his family, who and he does, you know, he did want to be an actor, he did want to be in the industry, but like he's literally like my family, I need to support my family. I'm going to bank on the connections that my father made to get into the film industry and become an assistant director. And he does.
Right. And even then, he struggles to be successful. Like, even then, it's like people are like, yeah, we love the work your father did, but there's only so much that can get you.
Yeah. And like, as an actor, he clearly, people weren't interested in having him yeah. be the leads of their movies. Like he was
don't have that star power.
Yeah, yeah,
whatever that it factor is. But I also like in a way the juxtaposition between Rakesh and Rajesh, like just based on like the snippets we got where mm-hmm. you have Rakesh on the one hand, you know, his mother is like encouraging him to marry and being like, oh well, if you marry someone you should marry someone like Pinky, and he's like, Mom, I can't even work to support myself right now. Like, I can't yeah. support a family. Like, that through line of responsibility and feeling like he has to be successful to provide for his family.
Yeah.
And then compared to, and I'm not saying, again, timelines are muddied. We don't really know. But compared to what was said about Rajesh, who's like out until 4 a.m., you know, hanging out with other artists, it kind of yeah. makes you wonder, like, with your father dying at such a young age, was Rakesh kind of forced into feeling like he's the head of the household?
Yeah, I agree. I think we can infer that that's maybe where he felt a lot of this pressure coming from. I think you make a really good point, too. I mean, it's very, like, older sibling coded and younger. You know, it's like yes, they're yeah, very, well, very yeah. solidly fitting into those roles.
Right. It's a bit of a cliche.
Yeah. And also just, like, the ways that they handle emotion. Because, like, obviously I wrote this down when it happens, but, like, Rithik talking about his father's way of dealing with his emotions and his love for other people, which is very, like, shut down, yeah. shut off. And everyone's kind of description of Rajesh as being, like, more soulful and thoughtful mm-hmm. and everything. You know, it's like, he maybe had a little more space to do that. And yeah. Rakesh was a little more, needed to be efficient about things. Like, maybe didn't have as much space to have those emotional moments.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just sitting here wondering, like, are those kinds of conversations interesting to others? Or did they yeah. feel like, eh, that's not what this documentary is for?
Yeah. But it's interesting that you say that because, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I found myself wishing that this documentary was more about the movies. And that was why I liked mm-hmm. these second two episodes more.
Well, it also felt like in the second two episodes, they kind of slowed down a little bit and talked mm-hmm. more in depth about yes. individual projects, which made it easier to follow. Because in the first two, I'm just like, we spent one sentence on this song, and now we're talking about this other song, and now we're talking about this other song. But wait, let's go back to that movie Julie that we mentioned like 20 minutes ago. And it felt a little more scattered. So I agree with you about that, too.
And I think when you're talking about composers, when you're talking about songwriters, they don't have as much to do with the full creation of the movie. So
right.
it's a little harder to do that focus, that deeper focus on like on the films that someone's directing or starring in.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was one of the things that I liked more about the second half. But I also feel like to your point about like, you know, do other people find these conversations interesting? Like, I think I would have enjoyed this documentary more if it had really just been about like, let's get to know the Roshans. Like,
yeah.
you know their body of work. You know all those stories. But do you right. know them?
Right.
And I don't think the documentary quite fully went all the way there.
I agree with that. And that is something I also observed in a lot of the reviews where people were like, yeah, this was fun. It was like nostalgic. It took me down memory lane. But also most of the information covered is already known.
Yeah.
We didn't really learn anything new.
Yeah. I felt the same way. But yeah, you mentioned Pinky. So we get mm-hmm. to the point now where Pinky is introduced and she's the daughter of Om Prakash, which I was like, Om Prakash from Om Shanti Om?
That's exactly what I thought.
But so, yeah, they get married. And again, interesting observations about their marriage. Pinky says yeah. that they never really fell in love because they spent so little time together. And then they were devoting all their time to raising a family.
Right. And that never... I kept waiting for, like, the but...
Yeah, I was like, okay, so...
And it never... Do you love each other? Or is it...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now the song from Fiddler on the Roof is running through my head. But, like... Yeah, it did leave me with that question. And I'm like, that's really interesting. Like, if you don't love each right. other, that's fine. Clearly, you have a good partnership. You've raised kids.
And you
kids.
Have good mutual respect. Like,
yeah. Talk about that.
Right. I'm curious. Right. Because it just, like, the way that was discussed made it sound like, and then. But yeah. that never was stated.
Yeah, no. But after they get married, Rakesh starts to talk very openly about the struggle that he had being successful. He says, like you mm-hmm. mentioned before, he's like calling producers and directors every day. He's often having to sacrifice his time with his family to get work instead because he's struggling yeah. to make ends meet.
I was just thinking, like, that element is something I just, not knowing a ton about the Roshan family in general, mm-hmm. it never even occurred to me that, like, Rithik's family might not have been wealthy
yeah.
for his whole life.
Like, this was, you know, I was just saying I don't feel like I learned anything new. This was new.
It was new. And, like, yeah. but you know, like, we know he grew up alongside, like, the Bakchans and the mm-hmm. Akhtars and, like, these other prominent families in the industry. And so in my head, I was just like, oh, no, they've never really had to worry about money. And it turns out they worried about money until, like, 25 years ago.
Right. Yeah. And it is all really interesting and paints a really different picture of this dynasty that I think was the vision that I had in my head. And the struggle, again, like that's a common theme kind of throughout everyone's story. You know, everyone yeah. had these times when they were down and needed to kind of fight through it to get what they wanted. But it just looked a little different for each of them, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, Rakesh is still trying to act at this point. He tells a really sad story about being at a party with a bunch of fellow actors, and a photographer tells him and Pinky to, like, move out of the way so that he can get a picture of, like, all the other more famous people.
Yeah. What struck me about that, too, was that it seemed when Rakesh was telling that story, it was less about how he felt personally and more that he felt like he was failing Pinky.
Uh-huh. I think a lot of this, because it's sort of framed with their relationship, he's thinking about her as coming from this affluent family, and he's not able to, like, give her the life that she maybe expected to have, which, is an interesting dynamic. And he talks about feeling like he was left behind as all of these kind of contemporaries of his go on to have these illustrious careers as actors. But Honey Irani does praise him for taking unconventional roles, acting as villains and side characters. But Rakesh says of himself that he struggled to fully emote, and Anupam Kher says that he played it safe as an actor. And so eventually he decides to pivot to directing, and Hrithik says that through his failures, his father figured out who he was meant to be, which is a very nice sentiment. And so, yeah, we get into Rakesh as a director. Madhuri Dixit and Priyanka Chopra Jonas both reflect on how Rakesh's directing was so good because of his acting background. And they felt, you know, more like they could trust him and you know, that he would speak to them in more polite ways, more supportive ways, while still getting his vision across, which, again, made me think of his dad and the way that his dad would talk to playback singers. So I'm just, I'm drawing all the connections.
Right. And I do really like that, like Rakesh's experience as an actor, even though, like, he kind of failed at it, it made him the director that he is.
Yes. Yes.
And so, like, that's incredible because, like Hrithik, I'm a believer that our failures can turn into something good.
Yes, absolutely.
But also, just have to note, Priyanka Chopra Jonas, in this whole, like, interview setup, whatever, the lighting, the outfit, the hair, she just blew me. I was like, girl, you are so gorgeous. Like, marriage and motherhood suits you. You're doing so great. You beautiful, beautiful rock star of a woman.
She is a fabulous force of nature.
And I know we're not here for her, but...
God. But we're always here for her in some way, shape, or other.
Yeah.
Speaking of powerful women, I really did love that one of Rakesh's earliest films was a woman-centered story.
Yeah.
About a woman taking revenge on her husband. And a lot of people didn't think it would be successful, but it was.
Yeah. And it looks amazing. I was like,
it looks pretty wild.
Really into this. It's like this woman, like, gets attacked by, like, a crocodile, and then she's, like, riding horses and shooting guns, and like, looks kind of like a cowgirl, and, like,
it is one of those things, and I believe that they did, but it is one of those things where I'm like, how does this movie that they just showed us these, like, I feel like I understand the entire plot of that movie just from the clips that they showed. How is this a 2.5-hour movie? And I say that from a place of, I want to watch it and find out.
Right. I'm sure we're missing some nuances.
Absolutely.
So that truly is on the list, because there's a list.
It is. Now. There is a list. Yes. Yes, we were inspired to have one in the flesh.
Thanks, Kim.
And then we get into an extended discussion of the movie Karan Arjun. Shah Rukh talks a lot about how he and Salman Khan in this movie were, like, kind of terrible.
He is not showing up. And...
Yeah, he was, like, a huge jerk throughout the whole, like, casting process. And then, like, actually on set, he's like, we didn't respect Rakesh in any way. We, like, we didn't think this was a good movie. We didn't like the characters we were playing.
Right.
But then the movie turned out to be a success, and he says that this is when he learned that he doesn't need to believe in a character in order to make an audience believe in a character, which is interesting.
Yeah, that was all very interesting, because he's basically freely talking about how hard he was to work with.
Yeah,
and
he
also
does
the
that
fact
a lot.
That, and the fact that he was, like, originally slated to be in this movie, but he kept pushing to change the character and then finally backed out. But then when he found out that Amir Khan had been offered that role, he was like, well, wait, no, I do want it. Like,
yeah.
And I love that Amir Khan is like, all right, best of luck. Like,
Well, and I do wonder, like, Amir Khan wasn't interviewed for this documentary. I do wonder, like, what were his actual feelings about
that? And, you know, and they're talking about this thing that happened 30 years ago. So they probably are going to be a little more casual talking about it. But, I mean, tensions had to be high.
Yes, absolutely.
In the moment, right? Yeah. Like, that was really interesting.
Yes, very interesting. But I do appreciate Shah Rukh's openness to talk about like how he was kind of a hot-headed jerk in his younger days. And it's those kinds of observations that just make me all the more confident that he is a good person.
Oh, for sure.
Because he like he sees the way he was then and how it wasn't great.
Yeah.
Growth is great to see. But yeah, so Hrithik began working as an assistant director on his father's sets when he was 17, and he worked on the set of Karan Arjun. He shares a story about how he had a literal fever dream that inspired the way they do flashbacks in the movie, which is fascinating.
And then when you see that happen, you're like, yep, this it did was come funny from a fever dream.
Like, right when he, as he said that, I was like, oh, I can picture exactly what would happen. And then, yeah, it did look like that, the color distortion, and And Shah Rukh says that Rakesh, throughout his career, has liked stories of an underdog who gets backed against the wall, but then comes back to win it all in the end. And I liked that. I was like, that's a great metaphor. I see how that, like, reflects his arc as a human person. And then we had to have, apparently, Hrithik just had to come in and just say, like, and that was the arc of his, you know, it just, it was very, like, okay, yep, we got it. Thanks for hammering it home.
Yeah.
Before the episode ends, we get kind of a tease of the attempt made on Rakesh's life in 2000.
Yeah.
Which was a weird place to end this because it's not, again, it's not where we started the next episode.
Right.
So it was weird.
Yeah, we didn't, I don't really think we needed to have, like, if you're going to do a transition from one episode to another, it should be better. Or just don't.
Or just like, be more consistent in the type of transition you do.
Yeah.
This was one of a few different, like, recreations that they did.
Yeah.
I didn't like any of them.
So I don't think that they needed. They didn't need to happen, especially when, like, for example, with the shooting, there's, like, you can use newspapers. Like, they end up doing that. So I'm like, that's a good way to be like, let's show that this happened.
Or just a prolonged shot on the person who's telling the story. Like, that's going to have so much more impact than just, like, seeing Rakesh as he is now, just, like, bopping out to his car. Anyway. Episode 4 does not start with that. It starts with Hrithik talking about how he grew up with a one-track mindset directed at filmmaking. And we get lots of observations about Hrithik and his illustrious career. I keep using that word.
I mean, it's true.
It is true. And again, a common theme that comes up for him, as it did for his father, his uncle, and his grandfather, is that he doesn't play it safe. He takes risks. Yeah. And he wants to do a lot of different types of things with his career.
I did love that, I forget who said it, if it was Abhishek or Farhan or Rambir, it could have been anyone, but someone mentioned, like, later on that he didn't go the easy route, and he never has, like, with the roles he's given, because he could just very easily be like, I'm handsome and muscular, that's what I do, and he, like, seems to even actively go against that, and it just reminded me of Kabul and, like, the roles
they showed,
like, that.
Stuff from Kabul.
They did, and I was like, oh god, I love that movie.
That's
gotta happen this year. No, we gotta pick a good, we gotta pick a moment when we're riding a high, and then we gotta bring ourselves down.
Yeah, I'll add it to the list. Yeah, I don't remember who said that exactly, but I do. Rambir said how Hrithik really changed the expectations of what it meant to, like, be a film hero.
Right.
And I just think that's such an important observation. I remember, like, reading about Hrithik as we were first kind of starting to get into Bollywood and finding that out and being like, that's really fascinating that there's, for better or worse, there became this expectation to, like, look a certain way and move a certain way. Yeah, it's just, it's really interesting. He really shook up the industry.
Yeah.
I also really liked a story from Madhuri Dixit about coming across Hrithik while he was working as an AD, and he was, like, doing Anil Kapoor's lines from the movie.
Yeah.
And that's just adorable.
It is. It. I really like the, like, trope's not the word, and cliche's not really the word either, but, like, the type of person who tends to be more shy and reserved in their real life, but then acting gives them the ability to kind of just, like, step into the shoes of a more outgoing person. Yeah.
I mean, that's just reality. Like, a lot of actors identify as being very introverted, and I can speak for myself as a performer, like, I have always been very shy and, like, did not talk to people when I was growing up. And then I would get on stage and people would be like, who are you?
You're acting.
It does just, like, it gives you permission to be a different way in the world. So, yeah, I like to see that in actual celebrities, too, because it's very validating of, like, yeah, it does make you feel more comfortable to kind of just, you know, be confident. You can pretend to be confident even if you're not.
Right. Well, and I also like that everyone is just like, has all these insecurities and everyone's just like, but look at you. Like, what? And I just, I also just really always appreciate the reminder that everyone's human. And like, what we look like on the outside or how we present doesn't necessarily reflect anything about what we're feeling inside.
Yes.
Yeah. It's nice. It's a nice little reminder.
It is. I thought it was really interesting to hear Hrithik and Rakesh reflecting on a role that Hrithik had when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets called in at the last minute to play this part, and Rakesh is like, well, I also love that they call him Dugu.
Dugu is, like, the cutest nickname. I know, I did write that down. I was like, oh my gosh, stop.
And then, like, all of the, like, so many of the people who they were interviewing, but, like, all the people who knew him before he was famous were all call like, yeah, Dugu. Yeah, we called him Dugu back then. So cute. But Rakesh is like, well, he can't do this. He doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. It was interesting to me that he didn't say anything about the stutter.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does. He steps in front of the camera and it gives him all this confidence. And this isn't where I had this down in my notes, but yeah, just thinking about Hrithik talking about, like, growing up with a stutter, so he, like, didn't talk, and he had a curved spine, and he even says, like, you know, and his extra thumb, it's, like, just something else that makes him different, and I loved what he said, that, like, he really wanted to be an actor, but all of his tools were broken.
Yeah.
But he was so determined to make it happen, and he did.
Well, and then you also see that happen, like, later on, too, where, like, Priyanka Chopra Jonas was talking about, like, working with Hrithik, and when you work with him as a coworker, he is just prepping nonstop.
Yeah.
For, like, a specific scene or a specific, you know, whatever. Like, he's always just, like, prepping. And it's just nice to see that when you think of someone as a Nepo baby.
Yes.
It's really great to see the effort that goes into their performances.
Yeah, the work ethic that backs up what we're seeing. And I think Hrithik is a very clear example of a Nepo baby who he clearly, in addition to having the connections, had the skill to do what he does and have earned his place. Like, I mean, thinking about, and we don't need to go into a ton of detail about this because we talked about it when we talked about Kahona Pyarhe, but just, like, the experience of his whole life blowing up in hours after that movie is wild.
Didn't this documentary kind of make you want to do another? I was like, I'm so bummed we already talked about this because I would happily rewatch Kahona Pyarhe and I talk about it.
I know. I do. I love that movie. It's a really good movie and his performance is incredible. And I really wanted to hear more of Shah Rukh talking about it because he sort there were a couple of moments where he sort of says, like, yeah, you know, it was, I didn't think he was, like, ready, but, like, suddenly he's doing this thing and he did great. Right. And I was like, and he literally said in there somewhere that it was like he'd been acting for 10 years. And I was like, yeah, but you had been acting for 10 years and you didn't feel good about it, did you, Shah Rukh? Like,
right. Well, because we've already talked about kind of the context of that moment as far as Shah Rukh goes. And yeah, that would have been interesting. It was almost kind of, in a way, felt a little bit like PR-y to have as much, like, Shah Rukh as we did.
Yeah.
You're saying documentary.
Like, public relations. Like,
public relations-y.
Because I thought you were saying, like, PR-y.
Oh, PR-y. Well, I always say it in an Italian accent, which is so funny, but. Well, also love, but in the sense that it's like, okay, let's finally put all these like rumors to bed. Mm-hmm. And let's have Shahrukh say all these nice things about the Roshan family. Like, obviously, I do believe that he feels that way.
Yeah.
And also, I'm like,
But it's not like we've seen any sort of, like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there was some kind of public reconciliation.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't find out anything about it in my research, so who knows?
Right.
But then we start to get more into, like, Hrithik and Rakesh working together. Pinky talks about how she was kind of constantly needing to encourage Hrithik to talk to Rakesh and to encourage Rakesh to actually listen to Hrithik. You know, it seems like it was a complicated dynamic, and Hrithik eventually learned that, like, everything in their lives was riding on the success of this movie. Mm-hmm. And when it was successful, he says that that was the first time he ever heard his dad cry, was when he told him that it was successful. And Pinky is like, my mind just immediately went right to, oh, good, we're not going to lose the house. Like, it just...
Yeah.
The family dynamics around all of this are so fascinating.
Yes. Like, was that a family decision? Did she believe in him? Did she kind of just have to go along? Like, and I'm kind of like, you're choosing to open your doors. You share what you want to share about your family. But come on. I mean, we're all curious.
I would believe that she believed in her husband and son. Mm-hmm. And I would also believe if she said that 25 years later when it had been a success, even if that wasn't how she felt
in the moment.
In the moment as it was happening.
In general, I just kind of wish we'd heard from, like, more women.
I think I don't know the balance of men to women in this movie. I didn't feel like it was disproportionately too many men that were interviewed, but I do think that the women who are close to these men, we could have heard more from.
I think that's where that's coming from for me. Yeah. I'm like, I would have liked to hear more from both wives and, heck,
and the daughter's
sister is here.
Yeah.
Like, she talks very briefly, but, like, what was that like? Because we hear from, you know, Pinky about, like, kind of the relationship between father and son during this stressful time. And, like, from the sister's perspective, what was that like? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think these are all very valid questions. But we do also kind of come to understand this relationship gets better. There does turn into this mutual respect between the two of them, and they continue to work well together for many movies, many of which we have watched.
Yeah.
I loved all the stuff about Koi Mil Gaya. I was like, I want to rewatch that movie. It's really cute, like, and very sweet. And, you know, that in particular was one of the roles that people were saying, you know, Hrithik is, he's not doing the conventional thing. He's doing something that's very much not the typical hero. And he's doing it well, and he's doing it with confidence.
Ugh, that movie's so good.
It is really good. And then, we see more about the attempt on Rakesh's life. I also thought this was really interesting, and this was a part that I did actually think they did a nice amount of kind of emotional depth into, where, like, Rakesh is clearly very, like, impacted as he's telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people say, like, oh, yeah, but Rakesh, he was fine, you know? It's like, he wasn't fazed by it. He just kept doing his thing. And then Hrithik tells this story about, like, no, he did actually, like, clearly had, like, residual trauma.
Yeah.
After,
like,
this.
We wake up in the middle of the night screaming.
Yeah. And Rakesh says that it was really the success of Kahona Pyarhe that, like, kind of carried him through that time. Mm-hmm. And he's saying all of this, like, getting emotional, and I was just like, this is what's really interesting and compelling here, is just seeing these very human moments from these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Hrithik gives a speech about how their family will always rise back up because the show must go on.
Yes.
You know, Hrithik talks about how his father shaped Indian cinema by breaking the mold again and again, making, you know, a sci-fi movie, making superhero movies, and that really gave opportunities for other filmmakers to break the mold, too. So then we start to wrap things up. Shahrukh says that the family are the heroes of their own lives. They take risks, they face highs and lows, but they keep forging ahead. And for them, it's not about being remembered, but about what they're creating for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Priya talks about how they always, quote, make room at the table, which I really like. Or make their table longer, is what she said.
Right.
Welcoming people from outside the industry. They're not the only ones benefiting from what they're creating.
Right.
And then Rithik says some very sweet things about his sons.
Yeah.
He says he doesn't want to burden them with the word legacy. He says, I want them to live fulfilling lives. I mean, days.
Days. Yeah.
And he says he wants them to explore everything, find things to go deep into, and then he wants them to forget everything that he's saying and find their own way forward. And I just think that's absolutely the perfect perspective to have as a parent.
Right. Just so supportive.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, I want you to hear what I'm saying about life, and I also don't want you to hear it because I want you to learn it on your own in a fulfilling way. Because he and his father and his grandfather and his uncle all learned these lessons in their lives that led them to success and experienced their failures so that they could have success in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, it's just a really great sentiment. And Rajesh says that if his father were here, he'd be so happy. And Rakesh says that they're still trying to take his name to new heights to make him proud. And we end with some very sweet behind-the-scenes footage of filming for the documentary.
Yeah. So many people involved.
So many people involved. Just droves of people. Any final thoughts?
Well, just about the Rithik episode, I did... Yeah. Really enjoy hearing, because we had previously talked about how he almost died on the site, like on the set of Krish or Krish 3, I forget. I think they kind of played it down a little bit, but like he fell from like 20 stories, and the only thing that saved him was this canopy. And that canopy was only there like by sheer luck, which they kind of allude to when it was like Rakesh was like, I thought he was dead. And then it was like, oh, no, he's fine. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Like, and then he's like, we should stop for the day.
But then Rithik is like, no, Rithik, if we stop, I'm going to be too scared to do it again.
I know. I liked hearing Rithik talk about that.
Yeah. I also, there were a lot of observations he made about dancing that I really appreciated.
Yeah.
And other people saying things about his dancing. But I liked he compared... like learning steps to learning lines.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to have their own interpretation of the of the same steps. And they might change, but that's just because of you and the way that you're interpreting them.
So
I just liked that comparison.
I liked that too. And I feel like you can see that in his dancing, you know, because it's like he works with different choreographers and everything, but there is like a through line.
Yeah.
From performance to performance. And we've definitely talked about this, but it's something I feel like a performer like Tiger, who's technically so good as a dancer, he doesn't have the same like personality that Rithik does.
Yeah. He doesn't bring the same like heart and emotion to it. It is very much like a dancer executing steps.
Yeah. Which no shade on Tiger.
No, no. He's incredible. Tiger.
But it helps put Rithik's perspective, well, Rithik's take on it into perspective.
Yeah.
My only like complaint, I really thought this episode, and I also saw it, this complaint reflected in some other reviews, I really thought this episode was going to take us farther into Rithik's career.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And I kind of understand why it was focusing more on his like the movies he did with his father, but then that's not really about Rithik, is it?
Yeah. And I think if the whole documentary had just been about like the collaboration, not just, but had been more the through line, I would have been more okay with it. But yeah, I agree. Like Rithik, I mean, they mention Kabul, which came out in, you know, 2017, I think they said.
Yeah.
But I don't think they mention anything more recent than that.
Right. No, I don't think so. And that was also something that I think the Rithik of it all was what drew in a lot of viewers to watch it. Yeah. A lot of people were like, I'm so excited to learn more about Rithik, or even just to like take a walk down his body of work and just like remember and enjoy. And that was the main draw, and it wasn't actually like there. So
that wasn't what they got. Yeah.
Those are my main thoughts.
Dhruv Rathi, who we've talked about on the podcast before,
who's
a YouTuber who I really like and have learned a lot from. He has a video called The Downfall of Bollywood, and he always does these like, you know, clickbait type titles, and it's a lot more like heartfelt and thoughtful than that. But it was really interesting because I had watched that video like a week or two ago and then watching this documentary, and what he's sort of saying is like causing the downfall of Bollywood is that all of the like big blockbuster movies that come out like lack any real soul, any real like depth or like creative ingenuity. Yeah. And the movies that are being made in Bollywood today that have that are getting stifled, and they're giving only the chance to, like, be in theaters for a week. And then it's like, okay, well, you didn't bring in any money, so you're out.
Right.
And he uses the example of DDLJ, which didn't start to actually bring in real money until 2 or 3 weeks into its run.
Yeah.
And so
it takes time for word to spread.
Exactly. Yeah. But these movies that are just, you know, they're following this formula that's going to make them a ton of money, and then they're spending all, like, you know, a ton of money on marketing, you know, that ends up being what people go and see first. And
yeah,
these other movies lose out. But I just thought it was so interesting to, like, watch this documentary about these movie makers who have so much soul and so much desire to be innovative and create something that people actually, like, want to experience and tell a story that they actually feel passionately about telling. And it's just so interesting that, like, the industry, and this is true in Hollywood too, has just really strayed away from that being the kind of thing that people really get the chance to see in theaters anymore. It's kind of sad. Like, and again, you know, there's a lot of really interesting stats and numbers and things, and, like, you know, the highest grossing movies of all time, like, three of them came out in 2023, and they were all, like, Shah Rukh Khan vehicles, and none of them were great.
Pathaan was pretty great.
Jawan was not good, and Dunki was not great. And he says that if you take that list and adjust it for inflation, you start to see things like DDLJ on there, and movies that do actually, like, have this, like, soul and emotion to them.
That's interesting. Yeah, it'd be interesting to get, like, a documentary on all of these filmmakers who maybe have been around for the past several decades and, like, did have the opportunity to make some of those films but are now having to kind of keep up with the trends in the industry, and, like, how is that going for you? Like,
yeah, like, I don't know what the last movies were that, I mean, obviously I know Hrithik is still acting and thing, but I don't know, like, what was the last movie that Rakesh directed or Rajesh scored? And same thing, like, with Adi Chopra, I feel like he's moved into more of a producing capacity.
Yeah.
But, like, some of the movies that are being cranked out by multiple of the people that we're talking about are, like, the spy cinematic universe.
Right. Which is amazing, but is...
But it does lag depth. And there's definitely a place for that in the world. Like, who doesn't love a good, like, mindless spy movie?
Right.
But I don't want that at the expense of, like, a Queen, for example.
Yeah. Right.
Or a Laputa Ladies.
I agree with that.
Anyway, yes, your research.
But yes, research, very brief. But one review that was maybe a little less praising mentioned that everyone knows that Rajesh Roshan's music is, like, plagiarized. Huh. And I was like, okay, let me just look into that. So just a note, it's not everything.
Okay, great.
But Rajesh Roshan has often been accused of plagiarism.
Oh.
One journalist, Karan Topper, counted at least 39 copied tunes, while an Indian music critic named Kartik Srinivasan counted 41.
Wow.
These allegedly copied tunes include some of Rajesh's biggest hits, including Jab Koi Baat Bigad Jaye from the 1990 film Germ, which was inspired by a 1967 song called Hear the Whistle Blow 100 Miles by Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. Another song he is accused of plagiarizing is I Dil Laya Hai Bahar from the 2000 film Kya Kehna, which was inspired by Neil Sedaka's 1959 hit single Oh Carol. So when he talks about using Western music influence, I think there's been a few occasions where maybe
It's gone a little past influence to theft.
And Rajesh has actually gone to court over accusations of plagiarism. In 2008, the Mumbai High Court ordered that the Roshan brothers pay 2 crore rupees to a music composer named Ram Sampat for using his plagiarized music score in their film Crazy 4. Ram Sampat had been hired by Sony to create a jingle for an ad campaign. Crazy 4 then used the main melodic hook from that jingle in at least 2 of its songs. That said, we're here to spread facts. And it's important to note that before doing that, the Roshans did contact Sony and obtain a no objection certificate, which would allow them to use the music.
Mm.
It just turned out that Sony did not legally have the authority to grant that, which came out after the fact. And then that led to the lawsuit by Ram Sampat.
Okay.
There have been many copyright infringement cases in Bollywood, but this particular case stands out because the Roshans did attempt to obtain permission, which is very uncommon to find in such cases.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some stuff that maybe wasn't mentioned in the documentary, but also layers.
Yeah. Important to be aware of.
Yeah. And then my other thing was Rakesh's attack by the mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Because they showed that very briefly in one of, like, the newspaper headlines, and I was like, why aren't we talking about why he was attacked?
Right, yeah.
It just feels like a little bit of a weird oversight. Mm-hmm. Not even an oversight, just like an intentional omission.
Yeah.
But so, apparently the criminal underworld was heavily involved and invested in Bollywood in 2000, which I think maybe you've talked a little bit around.
Yeah, we've definitely alluded to it in the past.
Yes. Yeah. To the point where they were known for making threatening calls to actors and filmmakers. When Kahona Pyarhe came out, they took an interest in Hrithik. They wanted him to star in projects funded by them, so they reached out to Rakesh to express their interest. I also like this they, the criminal underworld. Rakesh kept putting them off, saying that Hrithik had no availability, which was actually the truth. Underworld asked Rakesh to pull Hrithik out of other producers' projects so they could use him, and Rakesh refused. A week after this refusal, he was shot twice while leaving his Mumbai office.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, he was able to drive himself to the hospital and he fully recovered. And this is like the story told by Rakesh.
Mm-hmm.
And then this attack caused a crisis of sorts for Hrithik, who felt responsible for the attack on his father. He considered quitting the film industry because it was not worth his father's life. But obviously, ultimately, he decided to continue. But what's interesting is that I found several different articles. So that story came out in an article from like January of this year.
Okay.
That it was like Rakesh is opening up about why this attack happened. But there were several articles in 2021 that told a different story.
Hmm.
So this article ran in the Hindustan Times. It reports that Hrithik said this about the shooting. My father was in a lot of debt because we had borrowed a lot of money to make the film Kahona Pyarhe.
Mm.
The film struck big time. It was the biggest hit in the past 5 to 6 years, the one that made me a star. And just in the first week, this happened. They knew my father has hit big time. He is successful. Money is going to come in. So they wanted money and we didn't pay. They shot him point blank.
Hmm.
So there's this other story that it's like, okay, it wasn't necessarily they wanted Hrithik to work with them. They just wanted money. And there's also a theory that the shooting was not meant to kill Rakesh. It was just meant to send a message to the entire Bollywood industry that they were no longer protected from the mafia by the political party Shiv Sena, which had recently been voted out of office.
Hmm.
So I feel like there's probably a lot more there.
Yeah. And I think all of those things can be true at the same time.
Yes.
Like, none of them are, mutually exclusive.
No, it's just, like, additional details or perspectives.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I, you know, continue to be interested in, like, the quote-unquote underworld's ties to the Bollywood industry in, like, the 90s and the 2000s. I imagine we'll continue to probably just kind of uncover things naturally. But yeah, I just, those were like my two things that came up and I was like, yeah, I kind of want to learn more about this. And so,
yeah, both really interesting. I don't really understand why they wouldn't have gone more into some of the stuff about the shooting.
Right.
Because all of that's really interesting and the emotions behind it, especially if Hrithik was feeling that guilt around it. You know, I can understand not wanting to necessarily talk about all the plagiarism stuff, but I also feel like it probably would have been a good opportunity to address
it. To tell their side of the story.
In the midst of all this stuff that's very, like, praising of them, to be like, and also I've made mistakes, and also I've, you know, maybe sometimes verged on too much use of other people's material. You know, like, I think it would have been an opportunity where people could have been like, okay, yeah, it feels good to hear that from you.
But...
So, yeah, well, I appreciate you looking into both of those things further, because those are, it's interesting to hear those complicating elements.
No problem. No Bollywood Star Watch this week, but pluggables. Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on Instagram. Do what you do there. Also consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could even leave a review if you feel so inclined. But regardless of what you choose to do or not do, thank you so much for listening.
Yes, thanks as always. And join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists, add the songs that we love from the movies that we watch. And you can find those playlists in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts.
Yes. And now.
Yeah.
Our next film.
Very much inspired by the documentary The Roshans. We will be watching Karan Arjun next.
Yes. Yes. We're giving Salman Khan another try.
Early Salman Khan this time. So yes. We're, you know, our hearts continue to be open to Salman Khan.
Yeah. I have high hopes because, you know, we love Shah Rukh. We love an early Shah Rukh. We love an early Shah Rukh we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Salman Khan's there too. So, yeah. Cool.
boy, we believe in so many things. Okay. On IMDb, the plot description is Karan and Arjun reincarnate in the different parts of the country, but the faith of their previous mother brings them together in order to avenge their death.
Okay.
Their own deaths.
Yeah.
As I understand
that's,
it.
I mean, I love a reincarnation film.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It's available to stream on Z5. So I don't have access to that right now, but I will just read the synopsis off of Google, which says, when twin brothers are killed by their uncle, their mother prays that the god Kali will bring back her sons so that they can avenge the family. 17 years later, she discovers that her prayer has been answered. So, cool. Let's go. Kaja's in this.
Yes, she is. Yeah, which I didn't know until we saw her showing up in the
clips. That did definitely. I was like, okay.
And I also feel like this is a fun time to watch this because it just had its 25th anniversary and or 30th anniversary. And God, what is life? What is time? And, there, you know, I just was seeing a lot of stuff about it. I think they re-released it in theaters. People were excited to kind of get reminded about this movie. Mm-hmm. So we're excited, too, to see it for the first time.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. So watch it. Enjoy it. Maybe if you've already seen it, watch it again. Why not?
Why not?
It's probably good.
We'll find out.
Yeah. And until next time, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Bollywood.
We do. And we do need to understand, you know, the stories of the people who make the movies better. But I do think that maybe hearing it not necessarily directly from them would be good.
Helpful.
As well.
Yeah. Like a neutral third party.
Yes. Yeah. Just here's the facts.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep an ear out for that documentary.
Yep.
Yeah.
But until then, farewell.
Yes.